Okay, my name is Maxwell Cody, but you may know me as Schizotopia. I'm from America, and I am approximately 30 to 40, and I have a page on Instagram called Schizotopia Podcast, and this is my interviewer, J-Reg. J-Reg, what's going on?
How you doing, mate?
J-Reg.
It's me, J-Reg.
J-Reg, what?
I was raised on moose milk.
J-Reg, what is, this is an Irish accent, not a Canadian one. What?
I'm from the Irish part of Canada.
Oh, Irish Canada.
There's the French part, the British part, and the good Irish part.
Good. Wow. Really started getting angry when you start talking about the British there, Irish Dreg.
I wish they'd leave.
Well, you and me both, Irish J-Reg. Oh, no. the voices, they've started infiltrating my mind.
The French, I can tolerate, but not the British.
I can't tolerate these voices in my head because the schizo in my name.
This fucking shit again. First of all, let me just say this. Yeah. It's not Schizotopia because I'm schizo. Right? It's not what I think of me. It's what I think of all of you. And I'm right. All you guys have ever done is prove me right on this point.
I see. Okay, that's interesting. We're getting somewhere. So is this, the schizophrenia is like the state of the world, or it's the state of everyone's mind, but not yours?
I feel like you'll appreciate this. I used to have an Andrew Yang meme page a couple years ago. And here's what blew my mind about that. What blew my mind was the boomer mail I would get. It was unbelievable. You wouldn't even think there were that many boomers on Instagram, but they came out of the woodwork, dude. And the disgruntled mail, DMs that they would send me would be either like Yang being at the center of a right-wing conspiracy to collapse the United States, or Yang at the center of some kind of communist conspiracy to collapse the United States. And that's when I started to realize it's sort of like everyone has this sort of conspiratorial framework of thinking. And so the thing is, like, the QAnon people and the people who are like the Alex Jones fanboys and stuff like that, in a certain way, it's not that they're right, but it's that they are more honest about how they actually think about the world, because all of the liberal people basically think in a conspiratorial framework as well. They will just never admit it because they're obsessed with respectability. And to me, that's the only big thing that has flipped in politics in like the last 50 years, is that it used to be the right wing was obsessed with respectability and being part, you know, being seen as part of the institution and being the right type of person. And it's the left who is outside smoking weed and saying, eat my asshole, this sort of thing. And that is flipped now, where it's the right wingers are like, we revel in not being part of the institution, even if they actually are. We revel in, you know, being the outsider populist, blah, 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 quote unquote. And it's right. the weird left-wing people, all these weird left-wing middle-class people who are like putting signs in their yard, declaring that they believe in science and that they're standing against the Russian foreign conspiracy and et cetera and so on and so forth. That's the only real big flip I can see. But ultimately, when you get down to it and when you actually talk to most people, there's a whole genre that I'm sure you're aware of this go to a protest and ask somebody, just ask them why they're there. Just ask them the most basic questions possible. There's a couple guys who do this. And that's, you know, and it's the same joke, basically, or it's the same gotcha over and over again, which it turns out most people can't really articulate their politics. It's feelings based first, and then they have to explain themselves later. And maybe when people kind of get caught in that, caught in those headlights a little bit, maybe that's where the irony, quote unquote, comes in, and the supposed, you know, sense of humor or the distance between you and the thing, because then that's how you cope, basically. That's how you pretend that, you know, wink, wink, oh, I was in on the joke the whole time kind of thing.
Uh-huh. See, I think those people, those schizos on all sides, you know, the conspiratorial frameworks, the conspiratorial people, I think it's actually mostly an autismtopia. We live in an everyone is actually just autistic. And if they were schizophrenic, then that would solve their problems. Yes.
Oh, okay. I mean, I agree. I often call it digital autism, because I don't think it's a real, the kind of autism you find on the internet. Some of it is just actual autistic people who are just in their element, right? You put them in front of an information machine that works by sorting information, and yeah, that's their thing. They're gonna go crazy, fine. But a lot of it, it's like I think a completely artificial autism, because it's just people not being able to actually read people's emotions or meanings anymore. You know, what's called context collapse, where you're in yes. front of a flat screen, and it forces you to be autistic, right? The medium is the autism. I'll put it that way. The medium is the autism.
Yes. But my irony friend that I was telling you about, philosopher's meme person, was, he wrote a lot about cyber autism and context collapse and that kind of thing.
Wait. What's this dude's name?
Seong Her.
Oh. The guy I learned the term from was a guy who was writing about me and quoting me in his academic paper. It just occurred to me we might have the same weird academic guy.
Really? That would make
we
sense.
We might be in the same paper. But I don't think he ever told me his actual name. I think he goes by Frodethi.
Frodethi.
Or maybe this dude, whatever. Maybe there's now multiple people writing about me.
I mean, that would make sense. It's hot commodity, although apparently still academia is lagging behind on it. But
But I also see that as the death knell.
Oh, well, yeah, probably.
Because once you have like Zizek writing a book about memes or something, and like here's why memes are Hegel. You know, here's why memes are the end of history or something. Like, I could see that that's the end, right? Like, we got to stop at that point. I mean, not to mention now that, like, McDonald's is doing memes, which that's got to be the end, right? Or what are you going to do with memes? You're going to make memes IRL somehow? Well, how do you, you know, something I've talked about a lot on here, our whole pop culture is based on transgression and then the transgression of the transgression. It just seems like eventually you get to a point where you have nothing left to transgress, and that's what do you do after that?
Well, then you become JJ McCullough, and then you
finally get an explanation on how that man was created. Is that what happened?
That's pretty much, it's just like, I'm gonna follow the rules, how subversive.
how much do you Canadian YouTubers, how much, it seems like you guys are always beefing. I was I was literally shocked by some of the things that JJ said on his channel, because I didn't know anything about Canada. I never even thought about Canada growing up. I thought it was just a pretty nice place. Yeah, and what's crazy to me is he explains how Canada's whole politics revolves around not being the United States. I had no idea. I didn't know that there was a beef.
Hold on. Are you saying Canadian YouTubers beef with each other, or that Canada as a whole beefs with America?
Both. I'm saying both. I just didn't realize, I never saw Canada as a place with so much beef. And then the more I learn about Canada, the more I realize actually there's a lot of, there's some.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not the best person to talk about Canada, because for the most, like most of my life, I didn't really have a conception of Canada. Really, I was just like, oh yeah. You know, I basically thought I was American. I was like, oh yeah. I knew way more about what was going on in America than I did in Canada, because nothing was really happening in Canada until recently. Right.
Stuff's always happening here.
But I can explain to you his theory, which is not my theory necessarily, but like his theory is basically like American, like Canadians basically need to prop up a anti-American cultural identity to define themselves, even though we're basically the same culture.
But okay, but do you think that they're part of the same culture? They're basically the same culture?
You know, if whatever they have to believe in order to annex us, sure. I think it's going to happen. I think I'm 99% sure America is going to annex Canada in the coming water wars or whatever.
I heard something about, I think it's Alberta is the one that has all the oil. Is that true?
Yeah.
And that there's been TV ads where they've talked about we should join the United States.
That's what I'm talking about with Wexit. Like the Western provinces are like, Ottawa sucks. They had truckers there. There's a Western exit party. The way that Canada works is like the Western provinces create a lot of the wealth, and then it gets redistributed, some of it to Quebec, some of it to Ontario, obviously, because we kind of all, you know, redistribute the province's wealth amongst each other. So yeah, I mean, the Western provinces have a case to make to join America, basically get annexed by America.
And how popular do you think that idea is?
Well, they're like the Wexit party does not do well, but the Conservative party does do well, and the people who are voting for conservatives would be sympathetic to the Wexit party. So I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not really the right person to ask for this. It's this is all very like real world politics stuff that I don't actually care about.
All right, let's get back to not real politics. How much do you think the whole purpose of all of these sort of internet pseudo positions, you know, like the really bizarre, hyper defined, I'm a Strasserite, psychedelic Maoist, space communist or something like that. How much do you think that's just a cover for real opinions versus how much of it is actually creating a politics that does not need to exist in reality?
When I hear like a lot of these political positions, you know, you can sort of eke out some stuff. I mean, if someone's calling themselves a Strasserist psychedelic Maoist, they're probably, or like, you know, if someone's calling themselves like a Strasserist Maoist, if they just like list off 20 dictators, you can probably guess that person's not a libertarian. Like if they're just like,
yeah, but somehow they'll find a way to be. Somehow they'll still say.
Yeah, that, I guess that's true. There's like there's this meme of like Haas, who's like, I'm a libertarian Stalinist now or something. So I mean, I guess, but a lot of this stuff is like, you can pretty easily tell if someone is not on the cultural left, like is not someone who believes in traditional liberal or progressive ideas as it is right now, because they're like, I'm a Stalinist or like I'm a Juche, Nazbol, whatever. You can eke out some things like, okay, I know this guy's not on the cultural left or whatever. I know this guy's not a libertarian. Like that's pretty clear. It seems pretty obvious when based off of what word choice they're using. And then, you know, you can also just check the rest of their post history. And typically, yeah, they tend to be somewhat discernible. But how much of this stuff, like, does it actually have to exist? I think all of it should exist. You know, and if that's the way they want to define themselves, I think I'm all for self-expression, and their identities needs to be as defined as possible and specific and niche as possible, till everyone only has their own combination of a jarble of words, and then that gets us closer to some kind of an identity singularity where everyone is different and everyone's the same. Both ends of the extremes collapse in onto each other.
See, when I was memeing, when I was hard memeing back in the pandemic, believe it or not, J-Rig, you were one of my biggest inspirations.
Interesting.
Because you actually lived out schizotopia in the most literal way. I mean, you instead of trying to come up with one really defined position, you just decided to embody every position you possibly could simultaneously.
Yeah, that's that was something that I was definitely trying to do.
All right. How well do you feel you accomplished that?
How well do I feel I accomplished that? I mean, doing something like that, it can work for a time, but I think it's inevitably a chaotic state. I guess it depends if I was doing it as a bit purely, it would be sustainable. But if it's a reflection of my inner self, which is part of what made it compelling, then it's probably not super sustainable. And the actual schizophrenia is not helping. So, yeah.
Okay. So maybe beyond the old shtick that you were doing, or beyond the unfolding. Let me put it this way. You recently ran for mayor of Ottawa on the platform that Ottawa should separate from the rest of Canada.
Yeah, I believe I said that at some point in the timeline.
Okay. And this was due to quote unquote postmodern grievances. At least that's what the media was saying about.
Yeah, that. Well, you know, those guys can say whatever they want to say.
Let me ask you this. What's wrong with Canada?
I'd say the main issue I have with Canada is that it's not a part of Ottawa. Ottawa is a part of Canada. I think we're living in some kind of topsy-turvy, upside-down world, and I'm trying to make things right.
What would make things right?
If Ottawa separated from the rest of Canada and then slowly started annexing neighboring municipalities until all of Canada became a part of Ottawa. And then Ottawa became its new capital.
What's wrong with JJ McLeod? How is he both a delicious little like twink, but also a scary middle-aged man?
Well, I like your pronunciation of his name there, JJ McLeod. It's JJ McCullough. He
not in this country. It's not. Not in this country.
Okay, fair enough. Which country are you from?
The United States of America.
Okay, McLeod. He walks 4 hours a day. I believe that's probably what keeps him so supple and fresh. But yeah, middle-aged, supple twink. Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with the analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's going on there?
What's the question exactly?
Is it something that like the Canadian environment does to you? Is it something that like no, being think, in a I certain type, like a certain, having a certain political position does to you? Is something specific?
Yeah,
to Canada?
Actually, there's something to analyze there. You know, does being a soft, supple centrist, does that radiate out from your core? And
like, did you look at him and you're like, the reason why I have to be such an anti-centrist is because I can't allow this to happen to me. Like the natural force of the Canadian, field of gravity will force me into this very compliant, very 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 cute but very compliant centrist, and I don't want to be that.
Yeah, I do think there's something to be said about, you know, I'm a big believer in posting physique. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big believer in, why should I listen to you specifically? Right. unless I you know, I look at you, maybe your ideas are good, but you're unhealthy, you know, Right. You're just not living the kind of life that I want to live. That's why I'm going to be running a debate boxing tournament as the next part of my arc here. I'm going to invite people from all over the world, and you know, you do one round of debates, and then you box each other, and then you get a little bit of brain damage, and then you have to do your rebuttal, and then you box again, and then you do your conclusion, and then you do one final round where you're boxing and debating at the same time. And the audience rates your boxing and debating, and whoever does the best on both wins.
And this, so that's, and that, that's that, yeah, and that, that would be legal in Canada?
Well, we're going to look into it. Worst case scenario, we will do it elsewhere. But that's the plan that I've got in motion currently. And
my impression of Canada is that it's a country where absolutely nothing is legal.
No, I wish. I wish. No, there's lots of things that are legal here. Like being lame, that's legal.
Oh, okay. I thought that was more mandatory. I thought that was mandated by law.
Well, things that are mandated by law are also, yeah, that's a gray area. I have to look into it more. There's the only worry I have with the plan is just I probably need some waivers and stuff, but I can make it happen.
All right. So the last thing I wanted to ask you, okay, before you go,
Yeah.
is Kanye the new J-Reg? Because I feel like he's kind of stealing your shtick a little bit. I feel like he owes you royalties.
Well, to believe that Kanye is the new J-Reg, you have to sort of you have to have a pretty clearly defined, I guess, definition of who J-Reg is. Like, and if you want to really be schizophrenic, you can't be someone. Like, you're not allowed to be somebody. You don't get to have an ego. You have to be everybody all at once. And so for there even to have been a definable J-Reg at any point in my life is the only thing that I can identify as actually being cringe.
All right, you got less than 1% of the vote when you ran for mayor of Ottawa. Do you plan on
Whoa, whoa,
challenging the
whoa, whoa, whoa.
results?
According to who? The elites?
Well,
Wikipedia?
I'm just on the election website, okay? You know, this is
Okay.
this is all I have to go off of.
Well, look, listen to your eyes, all right? L listen to your eyes. And look out of your ears, okay? I got at least 400,000 votes or something like that. And they were all funneled to this other Mark Sutcliffe guy, comes out of nowhere and just takes all the votes. So as far as I'm concerned, I won and by a lot.
So, what do you think specifically? What do you think the people of Ottawa were so hungry for in you?
You know, I think they were hungry for the wall. I think they were tired of being downtrodden by other people. The Quebecois, the truckers, they were tired of everyone complaining about them, and they said, "You guys can govern yourselves." And that's why they fled en masse towards me. But you know, anti-democratic factions within Ottawa, you know, obviously conspired against me. Simulation theory, that was me.
What do you mean? I mean,
Like
you.
the whole idea of making all these tech bros think that they're in a simulation because they did too much acid, like that
Yeah,
was me.
how did you do that?
I was like Elon Musk was like 30 stages deep into a K-hole, and I was like, Elon, you know, like this is all a
When,
big
hold on. When did you
computer
meet
simulation.
Elon Musk? When did you meet Elon Musk?
Yeah. A couple years ago, we
How?
were hanging
Under
out.
what circumstances were you hanging out with Elon Musk?
You know, Elon was like, "Hey man, you want to hang out with me? I loved your this is actually this was before I had a real YouTube channel, but he's like, you know, I love your spoken word poetry on depression. So he's like, you know, I gotta hang out with this guy. So yeah, I was hanging out with
Well,
Elon
was he
Musk, and I was
depressed? Is
like,
that what I mean? People
yeah,
depressed people do a
well, you
lot of
know,
K.
he well, yes, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, he was trying to self-medicate with psychedelics and everything like that. But obviously he was just breaking his poor little fragile brain. And I kept telling him like, "Oh, yo," because I know how it is. It's all an illusion, and you basically try to intellectualize anything that you feel on an emotional level. So he felt on an emotional level that was all fake, and I just gave him a reason, which is the simulation theory that it would have been all fake that appeals to the weird computer nerds. And yeah, he bought it hook, line, and sinker. And ever since then, the simulation theory's been propagating quite nicely.
Weren't there other people who had this idea? Like, I always just thought they got that idea from The Matrix or like Plato's Cave or Philip K. Dick or
You
something
know,
like that. Like, why?
people have been hinting towards that, but the seeds were really planted by me, because well, it's kind of a long story, but essentially, like in many ways, I am the programmer. I am the programmer, and simulation theory is real, but only to people who are hopelessly mind messed up on acid and spend too much time on the internet.
Okay, but wouldn't saying that simulation theory isn't real, couldn't that just be part of the simulation?
No, because like, you know, the way I like to think about it is, we have a very limited frame of reference for how our universe works, and we're just projecting outwards infinitely using our own limited understanding of the world, and then we say, "Aha, it must be a computer." And it's kind of like an ant looking at the universe and being like, "Aha, the world must be a big anthill."
The best way to do that is to just stop thinking about it and accept what I'm saying is truth. Accept it. Accept it.
How high accept does a wall it. Have to be to keep French accept people out?
It. You know what they say, build a 10-foot wall and they'll build an 11-foot language policy, or I don't know, something like that. But the thing is, we actually like, you know, we like it when people separate. We want the French we want the Quebecois people to separate. We want the Western people, you know, the Wexit people to separate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, double down on their culture and their identity. And then that makes them all the more easier to pick off once we annex them.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at footage of some of your campaign highlights and moments today. And I noticed that you've chosen to get a mustache that is reminiscent of a certain controversial 20th
whoa,
century.
Whoa, whoa,
leader.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, okay, okay. It's reminiscent of two controversial political figures. If I spread it out, it looks like Che Guevara with the part in the middle. Okay.
Okay. That is that is quite literally a stretch, but okay.
So it's very clear. I'm related to Che Guevara. My last name is Guevara. I've got the same facial structure in the mustache. It's a sort of, you know, it's a very specific breed of mustache. So it looks like that. And then if I bunch it up, it looks like another guy. But really, I'd say it's more like Che Guevara.
It seems like a bold move for a POC, a person of chosenness. But it seems like an even bolder move for a Canadian to rock the Hitler mustache.
Well, I wouldn't rock the Hitler mustache alone, you know, unless it also looked like a Che Guevara mustache. So I feel like that's
it's quantum superposition mustache.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
At this point, you know, I just have to come out and say it. I hate podcasting and I hate memes. They're brain poison. They're basically a neurovirus, okay? And I feel like some kind of, you know, fucked up drug pusher. I feel like some kind of pornographer. You know, why do I get up and do this every day? I feel like I do all of this because I'm a fucking black hole, okay? And the memes and the podcasts and the content creation, that's just the sparkling light on the fucking event horizon that is the black hole that is me, J-Reg. I'm nothing. I'm no one. I don't even fucking exist, okay?
You know, I think the way to make yourself keep pushing this poison is you have to, like, just trick yourself into thinking that it's good, actually.
And, why would
and
I do that?
You do that it,
that's the worst advice anyone has ever given me.
Yeah, you would do that so that you can keep pushing the poison. You can make yourself an effective propagator of the virus.
But why? Why would I want to fucking do that?
Well, you know, we got to have purpose in our lives.
Even if the purpose is bad?
Oh, especially if the purpose is bad.
Why?
It's a purpose, you know? Give me a purpose. Give me something to do. Otherwise, I'd rather have a bad purpose than no purpose, which is to say, I'd rather be evil than neutral. That's the whole core of the anti-centrism idea. You know, push the pills. Find a place in the world. If I'm really efficient at making the world a worse place, then just really embrace that efficiency.
How did you get into politics in the first place? Why do you even care about this stuff? Why do you do this?
Why do I do this? Reasons. People love reasons. People always love their reasons. People love having reasons for doing things and explanations. Me too. I love reasons. Reasons and explanations, those are some of my favorite things. You already know the answer to this question. Some sort of, like, I don't know, mind virus from the future or something. Well, how would you, what is a meme? What do you tell me what a meme is? I'll riff off of it.
All right. Hello and welcome back to Schizotopia. As always, I'm your host, Maxwell Cody. And joining me today is me,
mother. Look at me, mother. Look at what you've created.
So what you have to understand about, like, left accelerationists versus right accelerationists is it's deep in Deleuzian theory. And essentially, machines assemble themselves from the future. And when we are assembling these things through desire, the desire actually creates these complex interconnected patterns of actually
I've been saying this, dude.
And these waveform dualities, they often intersect and create superpositions of ideological superstructure.
People sleep on the superpositions, man. They sleep on the superpositions. Yeah, this is key. This is fire, dude. Keep going.
So essentially, these superpositions of ideological belief can be collapsed in such a way that the two opposing political positions exist simultaneously and actually add on to each other. And that's how you get the anarcho-nazbol.
Yes, exactly, dude. Exactly. And this is the thing. That's exactly the thing that people do not understand about politics. And that is the crux of all of it right now, dude. It's that that trans-temporal anarcho-nazbol continuum that is the true north of all political discourse on the internet today. How many different kinds of irony can there really be?
There's a paper actually I was cited in, a real academic paper. They talk about trying to find good definitions for like terms like post-irony and meta-irony. Irony is like, I don't know, it's like a loose term. It's another one of those things like we like to intellectualize human behavior and like language and stuff. We try to distill it into these packages where we can refer to things, and sometimes we get close. You know, we can observe that there, like, irony acts differently on the internet and fulfills seemingly a new or novel purpose on the internet that it hasn't fulfilled before, and that it creates a sort of coded language between people. But ultimately, we're all just kind of rats grasping in the dark. But the answer is actually 17. I can show you the chart, but it's exactly 17.
Okay. Could we just start with number 17 and work backwards?
Okay, so number 17 is the noise. The noise that exists on the quantum foam at the dimension zero. Okay. And then number 16 is vampire irony. That one's self-explanatory.
We need to go over that.
Yeah, and number 15 is post to the power of infinity, meta to the power of infinity.
That is irony. One of my favorites. That is genuinely one of my favorites.
That's a classic. Then the 14th layer of irony. Yeah, this is all pretty basic stuff. I'm sure you could look this up in any book and find it.
A lot of my listeners, I mean, this is what they need. This is what they need in their mare.
Obviously there's reverse irony. There's the hyper meta post hyper irony. There's the irony from the future. There's just the word post. That's number 11.
That's a great one. You get miles on that one.
Yeah. It's just the word post floating in like a vacuum. Just the word post.
Absolutely. I love that one. That is an absolute classic.
Yeah. Layer 10. I mean, you know, there's a lot of layers. Is exactly 17. That's all I can really say. I don't want to get too deep into it, because part of the irony is the mystery of the irony.
It's like a deep sea animal. You can't take it up to air. It'll just die.
Yeah. You know, it decompresses. It looks all mashed up. People posted on Reddit saying, "What an ugly fish!" That was a beautiful fish before you took it out of its environment.
Precisely.
Yeah.
All right. What number are we on?
10.
10. Okay. Well, now we're in the top 10. This is where it gets serious.
Okay. I actually did draw out a tree somewhere, but I don't know if I can find it. I'm pretty sure hyperbole is the opposite of irony, because if you draw it out on a line, like, hyperbole is basically performing the opposite function of irony. So you could say that as you go to negative layers of irony, you actually start entering hyperbolic territory. And then what is negative infinity? You know, what is negative infinity layers of irony?
It starts to get non-ironic, but that's the irony of it, right?
Yes. Like, it becomes so, you know, what I think of when I think of negative layers of irony is I have a friend, Value Select is his name. He's on YouTube, and he's a very, very sincere guy when you get to meet him. And I think about him in terms of, like, whereas, you know, in the face of cynicism and mocking and kind of descending into layers of protection, you instead just become extremely almost like so sincere. It feels like you're being ironic, but you actually are being sincere. Like you're so sincere. You're just like taking on and, you know, you're allowing yourself to be judged and to be observed, and you just are what you are. And you're doing that like specifically in the face of massive pressure to do other things. Like, so that's a way of thinking about, I think, mm-hmm. something that really like is negative irony. Like it's like the opposite of irony. It's like, I don't know. My thoughts are all tangled together like a gnarled tree.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what number are we on? Eight.
Eight. Okay, you're really pushing this. I should let me think here. I wrote this down somewhere. I could probably find it. There's a bit of a logic to it. I mean, obviously, you know, you have to start thinking about half ironies as well, like demi ironies, because mm-hmm. a demi irony, like say layer 0.5 is like. Or even layer 1.5, you know, somewhere between irony and post-irony, where something's almost returned to sincerity, but not quite. You have a kind of a lopsided ironic effect where you say something like, okay, here's an example. I say, that really says a lot about society when you say something, but I'm not being ironic. Like, I'm not, because it actually does say a little bit about society, but it doesn't say as much as I'm saying.
Does it say whether or not we live in a society, though? So I always thought the Canadian Civil War started in 1874. I think it's General Poirot. I'm probably butchering that name, but
it's French. It's Poirot.
Because he was the Quebec. Still... Yeah, he was the Quebec general, and the siege of Ottawa, that was 1873, 1874. But you're telling me the Canadian Civil War actually started in 1872.
1872. Yeah, it's a misconception. Because we're basically overlooking the first few battles, which were smaller, and it didn't really ramp up until 1874. You're right. Like those were the battles people remember. But you know, my one of my ancestors, my great 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 grandfather fought in the in one of those early wars and was actually killed in 1872 in one of the very early wars where there was some artillery basically launched over the Rideau Canal. And yeah, so that's why it's important to me that people like understand when it began.
Yeah, it's wild because, you know, we don't learn about this in American schools, but it really looked like the Quebecois, they really had it. The French really had it. They had, you know, Ottawa completely under siege, and it just looked like it was going to be over for English speaking Canada, but they turned it all around.
Yeah. That was a big pivotal moment in Canadian history, the French versus the English bloody war. And I guess since then, I mean, that's the importance of history, is that it's just like, at any moment, you know, we could return back to that. That's why we always bring up the Canadian Civil War, like all the time. It's just like, remember what we could slip back into.
It totally opened up my eyes to just sort of the uneasy peace that's been going on in Canada since then, and gives a totally different context to Trudeau's prime ministership.
Father. Father. Look at me, Father. Father.
Daddy.
Look at me, Father. Look
Daddy.
At me, Father.
Papa.
Look at
Daddy.
Me, Father. Look at what you created, Father. Look me in the eyes, Father. Look me in the eyes, Father. Look at what you've made me into. Look at what you've made me into.
But at the same time, I have to be everybody, and you're part of everybody. So I really have no choice but to also be you.
Okay, I can live with that.
That's how I understand.
I can live with that. I can live with that.
That's how I understand things. I have to take them apart, live inside them. Are you trying to be me?
What does that mean? What does that mean, trying to be you? You've been a big inspiration to me. I mean,
yeah, well, yeah, I mean, inspiration, I guess, but there's inspiration and there's just aping me, you know, there's just stealing my whole bit.
Well, you're
biting off my whole shtick.
Wait, you know, with all due respect, your shtick was kind of a shtick that was done by a lot of other people. I mean, your whole thing is that you're sort of aping everybody at once, right?
Yeah, well, but to ape everyone at once, I mean, that's what you're doing right now. That's me. I mean,
I'm aping everyone at once by aping you. I mean, come on, man. This hurts me. This really hurts me.
It's just one extra stage removed. I mean, you're like setting up a burger shop right next to my burger shop. My own personal identity is my brand.
Yeah, but I feel like you're doing like the Taco Bell combination Pizza Hut combination, Burger King, whatever. And I'm over here with like my own little, like little grill shack. Okay. And I'm inspired by what you've built, but I just want to, you know, sell my dogs or something like that.
I'm going to be real with you. I sort of feel like I'm disappearing into a kind of niche internet persona. And yeah, I just feel so like small, like I've sold my true self into the machine.
I think you've given a whole platform of different selves for everybody to enjoy. I don't think you should be hard on yourself.
I've got so many selves, and I don't know who I am anymore. Like I'm just this guy on the internet who's just in a million different pieces, and it's so hard to make those pieces fit together and make sense, you know.
But you don't want the pieces to fit. I feel like that's your whole thing, and like that's what's made you such a compelling character, is that you don't need the pieces to fit. You don't need to maintain a coherent identity. I feel like every grifter on the internet, they grift by creating, you know, this very us versus them identity, you know, regardless of where they're coming from on the political spectrum. And your whole thing has just totally subverted that, right? Where, you know, you've just simultaneously made a parody of everybody at once. I think that's something you should be proud of, J-Reg.
Oh, that's a good point. That's very cathartic to hear. Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to Schizotopia. As always, I'm your host, Maxwell Cody. And joining me tonight, back from the dead, it is former Mayor Rob Ford. He has re-entered the race and he's high as shit on crack. Mr. Ford, it's great to see you.
Hey, what's up? It's me, Rob Ford. I was relevant internationally for my crack use. And then at some point I died. And my brother is Doug Ford. And that's about as much as I know about Rob Ford.
Excellent. Where would we put Rob Ford on the irony spectrum?
Okay, let's think about this. I don't know if that guy was ironic. I don't know if irony is the right word to refer. What do you think? Do you think he was ironic? Do you think he was an ironic character?
He becomes ironic. He becomes ironic because, and I think that in a way he was like he was kind of a herald of Trump and Trumpism. Because there's Rob Ford, the man who may be tragic and fucked up. And then there's Rob Ford, the meme. It's kind of like how people ironically liked bacon in the 2000s or like the 20 teens, whatever. And they ironically had, you know, a zombie obsession. But as time went on, people kind of start to become the LARP, and it becomes non-ironic. It becomes an actual part of people's identities. And then it actually starts to become serious. And I think that with Rob Ford, people at first they're like, oh, this is funny watching this mayor smoke crack and, you know, become this international embarrassment. And then there's another thing, because people perceive Canada as being goody two shoes. The fact that you have a crack smoking mayor is funny, right? It's like Trailer Park Boys come to life, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, given that analysis, it's a pretty clear example of post irony.
Okay. Well, so the people participating in it are post ironic.
Yeah. I mean, they're starting off as a joke, and then they're like, well, actually it's kind of based, actually, so, you know, I actually like this guy. post-irony. That's like that's pretty much the clearest example of post-irony. You know, you can give someone like a return to sincerity from a position of irony.
What would you where would you put people on the spectrum who are like people who start off being completely sincere and then through, you know, the slings and arrows of engaging in the political arena or whatever their cause is, they eventually become disillusioned, but they can't give up the life, or it's like they can't give up the act, they can't give up the game, but so they're still pressing on, but all of a sudden they have this kind of sinister irony or a little bit of extra humor that they put on it now. What would that be?
Right, like you sort of become the mask you're wearing, I suppose. Like you sort of, I mean, would this, like, give me an example. Like, would this include someone who's, you know, has to beat the same political drum for their own corporation to prosper or whatever?
You find it, so I guess there's two examples that are very clear in my life. One is the people who were like Occupy leftists, you know, mm-hmm. with me when they were like in their late teens, early 20s, and took it 100% seriously and really believed that they were going to overthrow the 1% and yada, yada, yada. And then by the time they hit their 30s, like, they know that's not going to happen, but they're also not going to join any other political constellation. So then they're just kind of, they're kind of going through the motions. They're like a, it's almost like you're like a priest that doesn't believe in the religion anymore, but you still believe in the church, if that makes sense. Yeah. And then the other group of people I see that in is a lot of like really hardcore conspiracy heads who I also grew up with, and people who were like, you know, got really into QAnon and other shit like this. And at a certain point, I think a lot of them have realized that a lot of that shit just isn't real, but they can't just come out and say that. So then they develop this weird sense of humor around it. And once again, it's like a priest who doesn't believe in the religion anymore, but he still likes the church and still needs to maintain the church, that sort of thing.
Right. It's like the structure is there, but the substance is gone. I don't know. That's interesting. I mean, you can, if you're looking at this from an ironic lens, you can sort of dissolve irony into like, structural subversion and like content subversion. So for example, like if you're looking at like an ironic meme, if you look up, I think you can look up like post irony quadrant. Yeah. Look up post irony quadrant. You'll see, and this was made by one of the guys I work with on the ironic theories and stuff, who ran this thing called the philosopher's meme. But basically he takes like a pre-ironic meme and says, okay, you can give it a structural subversion or a narratological subversion, which is basically you're subverting the content or you're subverting the structure. So a meme has content and structure. Like the content is what the meme is saying or like what it's communicating. And the structure is how like the, you know, the form of the meme. So you can communicate the same message while changing the structure, or you can communicate, you can subvert the message but keep the same structure. And what you're describing, you know, it's not a meme, but you're describing like kind of on the broad scale.
It can be the life cycle of a meme, you know, to a certain extent.
Yeah. Well, like, what do you mean?
It starts off, well, maybe it's the life cycle of a meme in reverse. It starts off with a certain energy, a certain reason for being. And at a certain point, it's gone through so many iterations that all of its original meaning is lost. And then but there's people who still are deeply in love with it nonetheless, and they maintain it almost the way you would maintain a piece of art in a museum or a whole collection of toys or something like that.
Right. Yeah. It's like my friend that I know from kindergarten that I just can't bring myself to stop talking.
The one who, when you go home for the holidays, inevitably is going to corner you in the bar, or the supermarket. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And I will make lots of justifications as to why we're still hanging out. Yeah, pretty much. So I mean what you described there sounds like the core has rotted away, but the structure still serves a purpose. And you know, that's actually, you're describing something that, you know, happened to people, I guess, that you knew. But a lot of people that I know actually, or at least, you know, like this is what I've observed, is people entering politics with that as, they're like, you know, I don't believe in any of this shit, but I really want a community. So I'm just going to pop myself in and I'll make myself believe. Or people, even like religion, you know, like they're like, I don't believe this stuff, but I'd really like to be able to. So I'll just keep going and it'll happen. So, yeah, I mean, that's interesting. Like, you know, I actually observe people like entering with that nihilism already embedded into them. But it sounds like you observe that nihilism sort of being beaten into them or something.
Mm-hmm. It's something that it comes out of the process. When I was about, I think, 16 or 17 years old, I almost became a LaRouche youth. I don't know how familiar you are with LaRouche. I would assume, I'm sure they have LaRouche people in Canada, right?
Haven't heard. Explain.
He's basically, you would like this guy, actually, because he's almost like, he's almost like if J-Reg decided to start an actual political party and 100% committed to it, because he starts off as like a communist, but then he develops this weird theory of like how all of Western history is Plato versus Aristotle, and Plato's a fascist who wants us to live in this, you know, frozen city, but Aristotle thinks that things can, you know, change and evolve. But then he gets into this idea of like, the Fabian socialists are creating rock and roll to make us all degenerate so that we can't have real communism, and it starts to almost become right wing. So he's like this weird, almost American version of Nozball. Yeah. They were really into the idea that if FDR had lived, he would have created this like super productive social democracy state that would have built infrastructure for the entire world, almost like Xi Jinping style or something like that. And they wanted to build a super pipeline through Alaska, just like all this like very wacky out there politics. But I remember this dude who was becoming my handler, who was inducting me into the LaRouche youth, you know, giving me all this literature. I'm like 16, 17 years old. It sounds pretty cool. I like all these weird theories and stuff. And I remember this guy told me that he dropped out of college to serve the LaRouche cause. And he told me that all he had done before he had been a LaRouche youth is smoke weed in his apartment and listen to Radiohead. That was it. And then his life was completely meaningless. But now that he had LaRouche in his life, everything made sense. And that freaked me out a little bit. Even at my young age, that tingled my spidey senses a little bit. But after hanging out with him a little bit more, I realized it was a cult and that I needed to leave. But the one thing I remember is I finally stopped answering his phone calls, and he left this voicemail on my phone that was basically like, almost like a jilted lover. He was saying stuff like, I really thought you were different. I thought you were smart, Max. I thought that you were special. I thought that you were going to do all these great things.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. There's no way that guy stayed in that movement. He had to have burned out of it in a couple years, right? I mean, whatever. I'll probably see him and he'll be the successor of LaRouche, who died recently, but or within the last couple years. But whatever. It's just, it seems so obvious that he joined this movement because he was just unhappy with his own life. And it's crazy to me, especially with the like internet politics stuff, and just a lot of the people that I've spoken to over the almost three years that I've been doing this podcast, is people who clearly desperately talk themselves into things. And it's scary to see that, because then you realize how much you do it in your own life.
That's interesting. I haven't heard of that, but you know, All I can say is I'm very pro cult. So it sounds like you missed out on a great opportunity there.
See, okay, but I feel like, please correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like Canada is not conducive to cults.
No, but that's why I'm pro cult.
Exactly, because you've never actually had to live around them. Where I grew up, there was every single flavor of Christianity and a couple weird off the books ones, and they'd all fight all the time. I just feel like that kind of stuff, even when you have a place, again, please correct me if I'm wrong, I just feel like in Canada, where people are very polite, they're just not going to publicly start arguing about religion, even in places where there is religious diversity.
No, I'd say you're mostly right, especially Ottawa's kind of a pretty good example of what you're talking about. We're all pretty agreeable, and we want to not, you know, ruffle any feathers, and that's all the more reason for that cult.
Listen, when we get to LA, this is what we're going to do. Okay. They're going to ask us, you know, oh, you're content creators. You know, what's the point? What's the pitch? What's the hook? Blah, blah, blah. We're going to look them straight in the eye, and we're going to say, it's a podcast about nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. Yeah. Finally, a podcast about absolutely nothing. Pure nihilism.
Yes. When you get down to it, that's what all of this shit is about anyway. It's all a big nothing, okay? Why cock tease people with the bag of Lay's, you know, is only halfway filled with the chips? Let's just give them a fucking empty bag, okay?
Very postmodern. Yeah, I think that's what the masses crave right now. They want to be given nothing. They want just nothing on a plate. and they want
there's
to eat
so
it
much fucking content, right? There's so much fucking content just streaming through your fucking eyeballs day in and day out. What people really long for is content with nothing. Contentless content, a podcast about nothing.
Yes, you can only really see the shape of the bag when there's no chips in it.
But when it's a balloon, there's possibility. You know, you could float away on it anyway.
Yes, yes. We need to understand the structure by emptying it up. Although, you know, when you have nothing, it becomes, you sort of start desiring a force to be pushed upon you to give it meaning and give you structure.
True. It's kind of like Leviathan is called into existence, right? So you give everybody nothing, eventually they're going to want a big something to compensate. And I guess that's when the fascism kicks in, right?
Yeah, that's probably when we integrate the fascism.
Yeah, that's when we drop the fascist card, because you don't want to, lead with that. You really can't lead with that.
No, no.
Especially not with these LA Hollywood people, you know what I mean?
No, no, no. You start with the nihilism, and then before they know it, it's fascism time.
The nihilism is like the lube for that big fat fascism cock. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no. We're gonna lube them up with the nihilism, and then bam.
Yeah. You always want to broach that that backdoor topic a little. What are you doing in the future?
Gotta do that debate boxing stuff. I'm gonna my next era after I have to wrap up this election stuff ASAP, and then I've been working on a lot of big projects, like. I want to talk about the schizophrenia stuff for real.
Okay.
And then after all that's wrapped up, I'm going to do my third era, which is my J regular era. And I'm going to decide to stop being mentally ill, first of all.
Okay.
So that's going to go out the window. Neurotypical from now on.
All
right. And centrist. Neurotypical centrist. Politically uninvolved, pretty much. Don't know much about politics. And I think my life's going to improve a lot.
You're taking the normie pill.
Yeah. I'm going to become a normie extremist. Well, no, just not even a normie extremist. I won't even call myself that. I'm going to apologize for ever being cringe or doing anything outside the norm or status quo. And I'm just going to play Minecraft or take my antipsychotics.
How long do you think that will last?
Hopefully until I get bored.
Mm-hmm. You seem like the type of guy who gets bored easily.
If something works, then I can make it work for a long period of time. But yeah, I mean, I have a pretty high bar for what will work for me long term.
All right, J-Reg, what's your favorite color?
I should say, if I was in character, rainbow or something, but actually it's always been orange.
That's a good one. If there was one movie you could make everyone watch, what would it be?
There's one movie where it's like a stick figure. The guy's got a tumor on his brain. And then he dies at the end.
Oh, it's the same guy who did Rejected Cartoons.
Yeah, that one.
I think it's called It's a Beautiful Day.
Yeah.
It's Such a Beautiful Day. Really? That's the movie you would make everyone watch?
Yeah.
That's, you know, one of my best friends. That is one of his favorite movies. He made us watch it for his movie club. Okay. That's a good choice. That's a very good choice. Should anime be banned?
It should either be banned or it should be mandatory, but leaving me in this gray area gives me too much agency over my life.
You gotta, so like a hard referendum on anime.
Yeah, we should make up our minds.
Absolutely binding referendum on anime. NoFap November, yes or no?
Definitely one or the other.
It's got to be one or the other. So whatever. If you had to choose,
I'm trying to think of what a good anti-centrist response to the idea of NoFap November would be.
Either we like actually lock up your genitals, or you gotta like produce a gallon of jizz a day.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay,
maybe
And it's randomly decided which one you are.
You know, I've been trying this thing where I fast for a week and then I bulk for a week.
Okay.
Just don't eat.
How's that working?
You know, I feel better than ever. So I would just do the same thing for November. 1 week, drain it. Another week, build it up. Then another week, drain it. Another week, build it up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not a week. Just like, you know, wait until you're totally drained, and then go until you can't hold it in anymore.
So can you fap while you fast, or do you fap while you bulk?
I think it's pretty difficult to fap while you're fasting.
But I feel like that's the part that's the most erotic.
Oh, well, I guess to each their own.
Okay. But it's got to be one or the other.
It's got to be one or the other. That's the only thing I can say for sure. One or the other. No waffling on this issue.
Okay. The thing about you, J-Reg, actually, is that you have to be all of these different things all the time. I have my wacky internet persona that's just memes and fun, and that's sort of like the party up front, but then I have the business out back, all right? And that is what you are jealous of. This, I am doing what you wish you could do. You wish you could just be a normal guy who could have a normal conversation while also having your little sideshow, but you can't do it, right? You have your little sideshow fucking come in, take over your whole fucking identity, and that's why you're trying to be me now.
It's true. It's all true.
Do you ever talk to some of your fans, meet some of your fans, and feel like maybe on some level you've made a huge mistake?
On some level, no. On every level, yes. Okay. But I feel that way pretty much given any kind of stimulus about anything I've ever done, and also just, you know, being alone with my thoughts. I think everything I've ever done, I'm pretty sure I could, and no matter what I do, I'll probably think it's a mistake at some point. So my thoughts are not to be trusted.
If I was like a huge Hollywood executive, just an absolute big shot, and you had a chance to pitch J-Reg the movie to me, how would that pitch go?
You know, I got in touch. Well, some Netflix guy got in touch with me, I think, about doing some sort of like centricide side thing. And we talked about like a pitch and stuff. I don't know if I really like the idea of pitching to an executive. I think I like the idea of an executive coming to me.
Well, sure.
Like, oh, you already did this.
Well, sure. But of course you would like that, but that's not my question.
Right. Okay. So you're saying I have to do a pitch. I think a centricide like style, you know, with cute little characters running around, I think that would do well. I think it would be fun, funny, relevant. I would stand behind that concept. Okay. And there's a lot of things you can do with it. I wrote up a pilot for a Netflix, an animated Netflix series with centricide characters would be like. And
okay, what was it like?
Basically, like, takes place on the political compass, and there's this town. And there's a new mayor in town, a radical centrist who wants to purge all the extremists. But obviously he's a centrist. So, you know, everyone that he commands to do things only does it like halfway or half-assedly. And the four extremists, they all hate each other, but they're kind of forced together because all the centrists are against them. And they get into some wacky, zany shenanigans. And every episode, a new centrist comes by who represents a different aspect of centrism and attacks him, messes with him, fights him. And then they beat him back, and it's kind of like a monster of the week sort of story.
Okay, who would there be like four main extremists who form the core group, or?
Yeah, pretty much. The narco capitalist, narco communist, state communist, and a monarch.
Of course. Would you eventually get into like, I don't know? Do you think it's possible to have some kind of ascended politics where you have like a whole new political compass? Like if someone was actually going to reboot the political compass.
Yeah, you like your future compasses.
Right. Well, I mean, we've done the alt compasses, but I mean, those are always, I think, are almost always completely fantastical. Whereas I'm saying like, okay, once you actually had a fully, I don't know what you want to call it, once you had an actual fully realized communist society or something like that, you would have a new Foursquare, right? Or if you had a fully transhumanist, or I don't know, if aliens landed, you would have a completely new compass.
Yeah. I mean, I always viewed like the alt compasses stuff, like some of the stuff takes place in like a post-capitalist kind of conception of reality, mm-hmm. where it's not like economic left versus economic right anymore. It's like like left accelerationism versus right accelerationism or something along those lines. Like,
I mean, the thing that I enjoyed with making the alt compasses was, you know, every now and then, actually more than every now and then, I would get a hit. You know, I would make one ridiculous little quadrant or something like that, and then you'd see a news headline or something later that kind of lined up with something that I said.
Yeah, I think my favorite of yours, it was definitely UBI, but it explodes at the end of the month.
Yeah, that was a fucking good one. And you know what? I don't know why. Here's the thing, though. You could have money that expired.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I like it so much. It's a great idea.
It doesn't have to actually explode. I guess you could get drone striked if you don't spend it. But, you know, when they talk about like tax cuts and all these arguments about like, you know, trickle down economics or where do stimulus checks actually go, blah, 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 blah. If you really wanted to like have money, I guess a more advanced form of food stamps, right, to actually stimulate the economy, why couldn't you have some kind of cryptocurrency that expires? And so once that money hits your wallet, you do have a month to spend it. So it will actually, it has to jolt the economy in some way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I basically was thinking the same thing. Like, you could do that pretty easily as well with a digital currency.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe this is the normie arc, that out of the great cauldron of internet schizophrenia, you actually start to come up with a couple usable ideas that you can actually apply to the real world.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm pretty much there already in terms of my own beliefs.
Well, so, okay, what are those actual beliefs then? Are you telling me J-Reg's actually going to tell me what he actually believes now?
You know, I'm thinking
what he actually wants?
I might just make it like an hour-long video where I'm like, yeah, do this. This is based off everything I can see, this is probably the way to go.
And that's it. You're like, this is the normie pill. This is what it's all been leading up to. It's all been one giant quest back to the center.
Well, not back to the center necessarily. It's still like...
Oh, you actually unironically pick one extremism, but this time for real. But then who could believe you?
Well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the idea of, you know, you have to believe me is very ego-driven and kind of pointless.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. It's, well, and this is another thing where it starts to become some type of zen, where once you've entertained every possible belief system you possibly could, right? You've done the maximum amount of brain origami that any normal human being could ever be expected to do. And you've come to see the emptiness in all of them. So you exist in some post-political nirvana.
No,
is that the dream? Is that the dream, J. Ray?
I don't think that's even like realistic or feasible. No, I think what you should do is just, you know, be a human. You know, I might be wrong, but despite all my faults and perception, this is the best sort of proposal I can make. Tentatively.
All right, J-Reg. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you humoring me. This is the part of the show where I ask people if they want to give a shout out to anyone or anything, including themselves.
Yo, shout out It's Such a Beautiful Day.
Shout out to It's Such a Beautiful Day. Great movie. Okay, so what I'm saying is that, okay, we've had post-structuralism, right? But post-structuralism still implies a structure. And if you want true ontological liminality, you have to get beyond the concept of post itself. You have to be post-post without self-consciously being post-post. You know what I mean?
How are you gonna be post-post without even understanding what post is? You've completely misconstrued what post-structuralism is. And your ontology and your epistemology is basically based off of a series of misconceptions.
Oh, it's based. It's based, buddy. Yeah. It's definitely fucking based.
I mean, you can be, you're based on literally nothing. Misconceptions and lies. I mean,
nothing is the point. Nothing is the whole point. How are you missing that?
Have you even looked into pre-structuralism? Like, do you even know what you're talking about? Like, do you even know where your post-structuralist ideas are coming from?
Pre-structuralism is a tiny little fucking baby brain shadow of what I'm fucking talking about. But apparently that's the level you're on. Apparently that's okay, the level you're on. Yeah.
The difference between structuralism and pre-post-structuralism. I'm talking about pre-post-structuralism, where you go beyond pre and post.
I'm talking about accelerated liminality, you fucking dunce.
You're wrong. Well, you're wrong. I don't know what to tell you. But I don't know if you've read a book in your life.
I'm wrong. I'm so fucking beyond right and wrong that you're still, that's the thing, right and wrong. You're still on this fucking, you're not even pre-structural, you're like proto-structural in your fucking thinking. So it doesn't surprise me you don't understand accelerated liminality, and that's why you don't understand anything else about internet politics.
Post-irony essentially is used as like an armor-piercing round that blasts through ironic cynicism.
Okay, but that's racist. What I'm saying is that's fucking racist, dude.
Well, yeah, but what you have to understand is that it's not racist if...
What do you mean colonize Antarctica? What the fuck do you mean colonize Antarctica? That you can't possibly be serious. I mean, you're going to take a pro global warming position, J-Reg?
What people don't, most people don't understand is that Jonathan Swift actually did want to eat those babies.
What I'm saying is these country folks, like most of them have never really done psychedelics. And if we start putting kind of like a slow drip of LSD or something like that in their water tanks, yeah, or their water filters, they're going to get suggestible, right? They're going to get suggestible. Yeah. That's when we start telling them about Maoism and shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, like, the thing is, we'll increase the severity of what we're telling them as we increase the amount of drops we're putting in the water supply.
Right, so, but this is a boiling the frog thing, because, you know, and yes, this is the thing, it's easy to go overboard because, you know, you accidentally hit that extra drip of the LSD and they're going to know they're tripping, you know, yeah, they maybe not know on what, but that's when they start to get violent. So, and then again, a lot of these country folks, they're not smart, but they are burly, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, well, we do this right, and we'll get them to be schizophrenic, and then we won't even have to give them.
It's got
to
be low.
Continuous dose, bro.
It's got to be a schizophrenia though. That's just like two notches above Fox News, you know, because there's only, yeah, like what, a million people in Montana. I mean, this would take us 6 months to a year tops to, you know, basically slow fry these people and get them on board with our plans.
You know what? I think is working with us though is I think deep down these people want a cult anyway. And if they have to become a little schizophrenic to do it, I think they'll do it.
So my mom's prayer group found my YouTube channel, and it was a real issue for a few minutes. I want to know about how, where, what, when. I've been snorting this thing called NuPEPT. I like doing... taking copious amounts of niacin to cure schizophrenia. It's actually very simple. You know, back in the day, we would give people these large mega doses of vitamin B3, niacin, and it would actually cure schizophrenia. But the problem is they get you on these antipsychotic medication, and then the moment you go off of it, you start relapsing way worse than the first time that you even had the relapse. And in Finland, what they do is they just take you and they let you kind of have the antipsychotics for like a couple of days, and they get you off the antipsychotics and they just talk to you. And actually over a 7-year period, you know, schizophrenics have a way less high chance of relapsing if they're off their medication than if they're on their medication. So really, who's benefiting? I'll tell you who. It's NASBOLs.
I fucking knew it was the NASBOLs this entire time, dude.
Yeah. Well, actually, I've decided to just be a regular progressive liberal and call it a day.
All right. That's nice. Could you just open a book? Any book that's close to you, or maybe even like an article on your computer, and just start reading it?
Sure.
So this is going to be a controversial opinion.
Okay, but we get a lot of those here. Yeah.
Okay, so I want you to think about the role, the kind of 4chan conspiracy theory about Jews, right? They secretly puppeteering, you know, immigration because they are a marginalized group. You know, we had the Athenians back in the day and they were like chats, and the Jews came along. They were sort of an antithesis to the Athenians. They were scheming. They were money grubbers. That's the historical, but I don't think any of that's true. You know, I think that's obviously a sort of post hoc realization to oppress a marginalized group of people. And I think that's honestly kind of disgusting that we allowed as a people that sort of myth to propagate, and we should never treat anybody like that, particularly because the real Jews are the Québécois.
You mean like in a sense they're just like an oppressed minority in Canadian history or something like that?
Uh let's say that is what I was trying to say.
Oh, well, no. What were you really trying to say?
Well, you know, if you look at how Quebec has functioned over the years, I think that the 4chan conspiracy theory about Jews,
bittersweet candy bowl,
they might have been targeting.
Okay, so
wrong.
This is a graphic novel. So,
please describe every frame. Okay, please.
Panel one: Lucy, the white cat with a pink ribbon, is asleep, and her pet Yashi, who is a Yoshi-like character, it says, "Sounds like it's time to clear the runway." Chirps, "Ready, lift off!" And Yashi jumps off, and he's flying for a little bit. And then Lucy comes up and says, "Yashi," and then Yashi says, "Mayday, mayday." And but she actually broke a picture of Lucy and Mike. Mike's the male lead of this webcomic. And so Lucy puts on her bow and she heads outside, and her hedgehog pet, she has three pets, says, "Heading out, Lucy dear." And then Lucy keeps walking, and her friend Daisy walks up to her and she starts yelling at her, but Lucy's deaf in one ear. So Lucy kicks her with a big anime kick. And then Daisy starts crying. And then Lucy apologizes because she's deaf in one ear and explains. And then she keeps walking, and then Paolo, who is a secondary character, comes by, and then she meets up with Mike, and then it goes on for about 15 more years worth of content. It was bold of you to assume I had a book around. I got this. I've been talking to the Falun Gong, because I've been trying to join the Falun Gong.
Okay.
And they gave me this text. Okay. Communism has completely failed across the globe. Jiang Zemin, a former leader of the last major communist regime in the world, said to a correspondent of the Washington Post in March 2001, "When I was young, I thought communism would come very quickly, but now I don't feel like this. At present, those who believe in communism are rare. They did not hold back in advocating the use of violence to destroy existing social structures and cultural foundations. The CCP's propaganda has been so deceptive that the victims willingly believe their lies. Slander and lies quickly enveloped the country. The purpose of the killing was to establish communism as the one and only religion. The founder of the CCP, Chen Duxiu, was an intellectual and a leader of the May 4th student movement. The party is the most wicked. A majority of the general secretaries of the CCP have been labeled anti-communist." You know what? I think that's probably enough.
Podcast. That's how you say it. It's pronounced
And I quote, "Who are kept hidden in the dark system,
Maxwell Cody,
also appear on the seashore as like little figures about a
snacks well way off the snacks
where,
well
as
Cody.
Kinsmen of the unconscious
kind of profile pictures
protect navigation
serious.
I.e. the venture into darkness and uncertainty in the form of dactyls.
Schizo
are also the gods of invention.
Schizo is completely played out at this point.
And apparently insignificant, like the impulses of the unconscious, but endowed with the same mighty powers."
How about that, Maxwell Cody?
It is characteristic of Goethe's feeling.
Care
nature of that the fourth should be the thinker. If the supreme principle is feeling is all
ginger, that's
then thinking has to play an unfavorable role and be submerged. Faust portrays this development since Goethe acted on his own model. Thinking became the fourth taboo.
One, two,
because of its
three,
contamination
four,
with the unconscious,
five,
it takes
six.
On the grotesque
that's
forms
quits?
Of the Kabiri.
Yo,
the Kabiri as
French,
dwarfs
does that trigger
are chthonic gods
triggered
and misshape them accordingly.
Dudes,
I call them pot-bellied freaks of common play.
Whack-tours?
They thus just, stand in grotesque
I'm
contrast to the
bother.
Heavenly gods
you don't
and poke fun
effort.
At them, the ape of God.
Nom 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 macadamia high in selenium. Nom 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 nom.
Okay, J-Reg, could you just give me your favorite animal noises?
A camel whose back is being broken from too much stress goes like this.
All right, J-Reg, thank you very much.
Fuck.
I appreciate it.
Piece of shit.
Fuck.
Anytime.
Piece of shit.
Fuck.
You're sued. And I'm just going to say it. You're sued. You're not even a sued. You're a pseudo sued. This is bullshit. You're a plant. And not even a plant I want to water. And not even
one that
a
I want to let die.
Water.
One that I want to let die.
Yeah, that's clearly full of shit. You're full of shit. Fuck you. You're full of shit. Fuck you. You're full of shit. Fuck you.
I don't think you're right. In fact, I think you're wrong. And not only are you wrong, but you're deeply flawed as a person. You're deeply flawed as a person. You're deeply flawed as a person. You're deeply
shit.
Shit.
Shit. God damn it. God damn it. God damn it.